This is Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. The following is a conversation held today, August 8th, with Jody Evans, co-founder of Code Pink. Jody has just recently returned from Amman, Jordan, where a delegation from Code Pink and Troops Home Fast met with Iraqi parliamentarians. Inexplicably, the first part of this conversation was lost. We get right into mid-sentence with Jody. She's talking about how difficult it was listening to all basically the horror stories of the Iraqi parliamentarians that they talked with. So let's get right into the middle of that conversation.
Depressing, and you just were ashamed to be an American sitting in that room. You know, on the other side of it, the Iraqi parliamentarians and doctors and professors and economists were generous and kind and forthright and considerate and quite, you know, and brutally honest at the same time. So it was a success in the sense that we went, we were accepted, we were appreciated. They are ready to work with us. We were able to come to some agreement on what that would look like, and at the same time, you know, it was just it's just horrible what we have done to that country.
So, boy, I'm sure there was lots of things happened during that, was it 2 or 3 days, or was it more
it
than
was,
that?
It was 3 days.
3 days. And there's also still more happening. You're back in Venice, California to kind of, keep Code Pink running, but also there's others that have stayed behind and are doing, I think you told me earlier that
right.
they've...
We kind of broke up into three groups.
Okay.
Some of us came back to get the word out.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like Tom Hayden and Del LaMagna from Washington State, and Cindy Sheehan had to get back to sit outside of Bush's ranch on Sunday at the first anniversary of her first sit out. And then another group, Anne Wright and Rayed, who's the Iraqi who helped us organize the delegation, and Jeff Millard from Iraq Veterans Against the War. They went on to Damascus to interview many of the victims of torture that Rayed had set up, and they've been doing that every day. And Medea and Gail and Diane Wilson, all the co-founders of Code Pink, continued on to Beirut, where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, last night, Medea wrote that a bomb went off about a mile away from them, and 14 were killed, and they went over, and it was mostly children. So they're right in the middle of it, found their way through a kind of a mountain pathway that hadn't been bombed already.
Well, Code Pink has always been in the middle of it, I think, since its inception right here, as far as the peace movement in this country, but several trips to the Middle East for various reasons, including to Iraq before the war started.
Yes, we've been 5 times now.
So what is next? You're back home, I'm sure, trying to pull together what you feel you learned from this trip, and do you have any sense of what is next? I know the fast continues.
Right. I think one of the reasons I came back is I'm one of the ones still on the hunger strike.
Oh, so, you are? Okay, so you're on day 36?
Yes.
Oh, my. So are you doing a water and juice fast?
Water and juice, yes.
Well, I admire you. I'm actually on my 21st day, and actually going to break it tonight with a little, hopefully, a little community gathering here.
Oh, thank you.
Right. Well, I'm astounded. Actually, I think there's a few others that are continuing. Cindy, I believe, was continuing.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So what? So where are we? One of the things.
So let me just talk a little bit about what we saw and felt, and you know, a couple things
sure.
that people said. The first few days were meeting with different members of parliament that came from the smaller parties, the more independent parties, including a woman who's a doctor who told us about the situation in the hospitals and how they basically, it's hard to find a hospital that's still running, that most of the doctors have left Iraq if they could afford it, that what's left are young doctors. One of the other doctors we met with said you can't even get, you know, a gallstone removed. There's so little left there that, you know, the hospitals have been kind of plunged from any kind of medicine and equipment, and that it's really a human situation is just devastating. This woman, by the way, is her best friend was the other woman member of parliament that's a Sunni that was kidnapped about 4 months ago and is still missing with no word about her. The woman we met with was also Sunni. She lives in Jordan with her family. Thing is, you know, in all the times we've gone to Iraq in the last 3.5 years, we've always had to pass through Jordan. And what you're seeing in Jordan is, time I go by, it becomes richer and richer. That the Iraqi money is just flowing in. It is one of the safe places where they can go. And the estimates that we heard were something in the neighborhood of 500,000 people have come to Jordan from Iraq that could afford to be there. You know, each person's story was different about their relationship to Iraq and what's happening. They all came to the same conclusion that the U.S. has got to get out, that, you know, those who won election and are in the government right now won on an out-of-Iraq message to the voters, and their credibility is going down daily because nothing has happened and what they had promised isn't happening. They were all very mad with what Maliki said to our Congress and said he lied, that that's not how the Iraqi people feel, nor those that are in government. You know, to a person, they all said that the government of Iraq is a joke. And again, they're all members of this government, but they say it's basically seen as a joke. One of the members from the largest party, who's a Shiite, he has 129 seats in his party. He said that, you know, it had been, and this is a very, you know, serious man. He was there with his Sunni best friend from high school, who is also in the parliament. He comes from the Sunni bloc of 35 seats, the biggest representation from the Sunni party. And his commitment had been that when the constitution was ratified, it would be ratified by everyone, that there wouldn't be a constitution until everyone agreed to it. And he said that, you know, it got back and back, and that wasn't happening. And eventually, because he wasn't meeting Bush's deadline, a note came across his desk that Bush says that unless you ratify this constitution, he will level your city. Now, it's not, I mean, that happened often. That has happened often in Iraq, that cities have been leveled. So that's a real threat. And he felt very ashamed that he had let the Constitution go through without it being agreed to by everyone, and therefore basically is meaningless piece of paper. But, you know, a publicity stunt for the Bush administration for the U.S. So you really got a sense. I mean, I actually couldn't breathe after I heard that. You actually get a sense that for our media, there's like all these publicity stunts that happen at the price of the Iraqis' lives and their livelihoods, probably daily. That it's like a show that's being choreographed, and no one's really caring about the Iraqi people, and the Iraqi people know that. You know, one of the things that's happened in the last year is this influx of militia. Because the U.S. has done such a bad job on the protection of Iraqi people, the, you know, they've had to take kind of the, take it into their own hands to come up with protection. So militias have been formed, and they've been funded, many of them, from Iran and other places. Sadr has, you know, his own, and I believe he had that prior to us coming in. Probably not as big as it is now, but I know that he did have his own militia when we went there early on, even before we invaded. But now you have a country full of militia that are fighting each other. And so one of the interesting solutions to this problem by actually the SUNY member from the largest voting bloc, was that what needed to happen was if the U.S. government left, that they could take a very small percentage, I believe 10% of what they spend on the U.S. Army to be there. And if they then employed with that money, if the Iraqis employed a million people into the Army to rebuild Iraq and many other things, that then, and that would only be at $3 a day, he said at $3 a day, that would then solve the problem that's causing the violence, which is an economic problem, that nobody has jobs and no one has money. So when the influx of money comes from Iran or someplace else for these militia, that's the only place they can get a job. And so if you employed a million Iraqis in the army to help rebuild Iraq, you would actually be affecting somewhere between 7 million and 9 million people. And Iraq would be, when we invaded, was a country of 25 million, could be somewhere, you know, between 20 and 23 right now. So it would go a long way to helping the violence. None of them felt that the violence was about the Sunni and the Shiite. And we met with everyone from all, you know, different religions. And religions that weren't, you know, religious, more secular. And to a person, they agreed that this has nothing to do with Sunni and Shiite. It's a political thing. That the thing that's called the Civil War is really political. And so that it has to be dealt with at the root, which is, again, a situation which is really about poverty and no control. That, you know, as we've said out of Code Pink from the very beginning, that it's, there is no center. And when you have no center, it allows chaos and it causes this, you know, breakup of power and small power fiefdoms to grow up. And because the U.S. doesn't give the Iraqis power, that they all left. No one can do anything without the U.S. approval, so the democracy in their government is a joke. So that there's no one that can hold anyone accountable or responsible, which makes it ungovernable.
Well, isn't it, it seems so obvious that any Iraqi government, you might say so-called government, that has the backing of the U.S. government is not going to be legitimate in the eyes of most of the Iraqi people. They're going to have a step against them right from the beginning.
That's correct. I mean, basically, one of the people said, you know, if the U.S. does pull out, probably the members of this government will leave first.
Right. It's a very bad situation that they're all in, it seems like, for all the people who can't, who don't have the wherewithal financially or whatever to get out of the country. And then you've got a government that's just kind of got its neck stuck out there. So
yeah, I mean, only, you know, very few of the people we met with actually came from Iraq. They came from Jordan or Syria. You know, especially like that woman I told you, the doctor, it's too dangerous for her to be actually in Iraq. Now, you know, so after hearing horrible stories of torture and mayhem and disrespect and all that, we did come down to something that we could begin to work on together. And what they see is that their best chance is with the Security Council meeting in December. Because, you know, the U.S. can no longer say that they need to be there, because a civil war is a civil war and it's none of the U.S.'s business. So they're happy to call it a civil war so that they can use that to help get the U.S. out. And so it would be to work towards the U.N. Security Council voting that the U.S. has to get out. And so that would be a full-on campaign that we would run both out of the U.S. and out of Iraq, both to other countries, and getting each our own getting factions in our own country to be vocal for that. So that when the U.N. got together, the only answer they could come up with is the U.S. get out.
So the is Iraq a scheduled agenda item for the December meeting, or is it what?
Yes, yes. Okay. It's in the docket already.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that sounds like a good solid piece of campaigning that hopefully the peace movement in this country can get behind.
We should have. They're going back. We're going back. You know, to work both in, you know, kind of how to language the different pieces that we need to agree on, kind of as simply as possible as what's needed. For them, it's, you know, what has to happen on reconciliation is the U.S. has to get out, and also that the U.S. needs to be responsible for the damage they've done financially. And then that there needs to be amnesty for freedom fighters in Iraq. And then how that's defined will be probably one of the sticking points.
Mm-hmm. Okay, are there any future meetings with Iraqi politicians?
I mean, we will be continuing. We'll probably be going back every 2 to 3 weeks. They're coming back into session at the beginning of September, and they're having they had just come from a reconciliation meeting in Egypt where they also had to kind of go back and work on refining what had happened and getting people to be on the same page. So there's, you know, some legwork that has to be done each in our own country, and then we'll come back together. You know, one of the other things probably that we'll do is, like we did with the Iraqi woman, bringing them to the U.S. and having them tour, we'll probably bring some of the victims of torture that we met with, so people in America can get a better sense of what's really happening through these tours, because, you know, we don't get the truth at all.
Right.
You know, a lot of what we will be doing on both sides is, information campaigns.
Okay, so what is the best place for folks to go if they want to keep up to date on how this develops? Is that the Code Pink website?
Right, it's codepinkalert.org.
Okay.
And if they sign up for the alerts, we put out alerts every week to inform, inspire, and motivate people into action. And so, you know, what each step will be coming out of the Code Pink website.
Okay. Well, I am
and
one
if
of...
If they want to join us now on the hunger strike, they can join us, and if you sign up, then you're automatically added onto the Code Pink.
Okay, and that's at troopshomefast.org.
Correct.
Okay, well, I'm one of the folks, and there's a few around, hopefully. I know there's over 4,000 that are listed as fasting right now, but that are excited about this. I've been excited when I first heard that you all were going to Jordan. I think it's a little slogan's gone around in my mind, that if you can't remove the bush, go around it. And and that's what I think what you're doing. You're in a very important and meaningful way. It's the peacemakers that need to start making the peace here.
Well, and that's, you know, what the Iraqis are doing too. And it was interesting that they read about, you know, our hunger strike, and they were moved by it, and then they reached out to us and said, you know, we need help, we need your help, we want to get the U.S. out, and we know you want to, and so let's start working together. So it's interesting to have it coming together this way, like you said, around the bush.
Right. Well, thank you for spending time today and updating us on what's going on. And I'm excited, like I said, to keep up on how this develops and see what we can do to help build it. So thank you, Jody.
Thank you, and thanks for joining with us.
That was Jody Evans of Code Pink and Troops Home Fast. You can get more information on Troops Home Fast at troopshomefast.org. You can go there and get updated information on how the fast or hunger strike is going. You can also sign up to join the fast and perhaps build a rolling fast in your community. It's going all the way up through September 21st, International Day of Peace. Also, to keep updated on actions and programs of Code Pink, you can go to codepinkalert.org and sign up for their regular alerts and keep track of how this peace process develops. This is Scott Berguin of KSOWLP in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We'll talk to you next time.